Welcome back to Passionate World Talk Radio. Educate, enlighten, entertain, and cool your heels. Heard every Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. with your host, Lillian Caldwell. And today on Cool Your Heels, our special guest is Bruce Thatcher, who wrote a book about guns. Oh, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised what he has to say. So good morning, Bruce. How's the day going?
My day's going just great. I hope yours is, too.
Oh, absolutely. And I will also wish you Happy V-Day. Get that out of the way.
Okay. Happy Valentine's to you, too.
Thank you. Could you please tell everybody the title of your book and why you felt it was essential to write a book like that?
The title of the book is Gun Mania, the main title. And mania is chosen because it's like obsession. It has to do with America's obsession with guns, both pro and anti, if you look at it that way. Subtitle is A New Perspective, and it ends up talking about how we can actually achieve something in terms of saving lives in this country. The book, I felt the need for it, obviously, because I think that what we've done for the past several years in this country is either just argue vehemently against guns and that they ought to be abolished from everywhere in America and pound our heads against the walls trying to do that, or we've responded by arguing passionately that it's our right to have guns and arguing for all of the historical and supposed present reasons why that should be so. I looked at it, and I got the idea when I was reading a book on culture, actually, an academic book, and it struck me that people are inclined to say, well, there's an American gun culture. That's not quite right. What is right, I believe, is that culture, guns are a core element of our culture. And so I set out to show how that was so, why, and how that became so, and equally importantly, why and how it is the fact that guns are not a core element of the cultures of other countries. So a good bit of the book is to explain that cultural element, then illustrate these historical examples, and then finally, what are the implications? What does it mean to us today if we really want to do something about saving lives? And that's the genesis of the book.
And that's a very good way of looking at it. Now, I know what is written in the Constitution. However, what was written then in the 1700s has nothing in common with what's going on in the 21st century. And I think that people need to grow in order to make a better society and to make a better culture.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And growing means that we need to listen to each other. We need to understand each other. And above all, we need to get our minds around what is it we really need to do. What is it we really want to do? What's our objective? It's on the subject of guns. Is our objective to get rid of guns? And as long as we do that, we're happy. Is our objective to end gunshot caused deaths, and then we're happy? Or should we be looking at a little bit broader aspect of it? Take suicides, for instance. Suicides account for about 50,000, 60,000 deaths in this year, or deaths in this country, and maybe 60% of them are result from gunshot wounds. Now, being obsessed with guns might imply, when we say let's get rid of guns, that we only care about those suicides if they're caused by guns. Similar thing with homicides. Are we only interested in ending homicides if they're gun-related, but other homicides are okay. I guess what I'm saying is let's focus on doing the things or trying to the things that will prevent suicides, many of which would have been caused by guns, and let's look at the underlying motivations and circumstances that result in homicides and do what we can to prevent them, whether or not they're caused by guns. And it seems to me that's what our focus should be on. If we'd take all this energy and effort that we spend on haranguing for or against guns and instead harangue against suicide and seek solutions, meaningful and consistent and long-lasting solutions for reducing suicides, we would save far more lives. Same thing with homicides.
And school shootings. The gun industry reminds me of the tobacco industry, which also is a direct descendant from the Indians who introduced us to pipe smoking. And I remember as a kid all the commercials and everything on the newly constructed TV. And I also remember the power that those tobacco companies wielded for their industry. But look at it now. The government has stepped in, and yes, there's still people who smoke, and most, in terms of relativity, most of our tobacco products land up in the third world countries from cancer. But the point is that we, the people, took on a very powerful lobby group, the tobacco companies, and managed to tame it a bit in order to achieve getting rid of smoking cigarettes. Now, I won't get stuttered on the vapor thing, but that's what it reminds me of what we, the people, can do should we all decide to be on the same side.
Well, I will take your point on that and say if we could all get on the same side, I believe we could accomplish some of those kinds of things. Let's look at the smoking thing. I, too, grew up when smoking was very prevalent, and I, too, observed what we did as a country, much of it government-inspired, to reduce the incidence of smoking. What we did not do was pass a law that said smoking was illegal. I think we learned from Prohibition that that wasn't the route to take. What we did do is require that information, full information, be provided. We required manufacturers to do something, provide information about the health aspects, even against their wishes, so that people could at least have full facts in front of them and information about what they were doing. And then we flooded communication channels in this country with trying to teach people that it was not a good idea to smoke. And we had, I mean, there were grisly pictures of lungs and deaths and things like this. We educated people. And smoking has come down dramatically in this country. Another example is automobile deaths.
Yes.
Not too long ago, there were more people killed by automobile accidents than there were by gunshot wounds.
I'm sure you were around when they first introduced seatbelts, because seatbelts weren't always in cars. They didn't come in until, I think, the early 60s.
I sure did. And as a matter of fact, my brother was killed in an automobile accident in which he would probably not even have been injured had he had a seatbelt.
Yes.
So we began taking all kinds of actions. We made cars safer. We mandated that cars be safer. We built safer roads. We educated people about being safe in cars, and got much more stringent about enforcing driving while intoxicated. We did a lot of things over a period of time. The effort to reduce automobile-related deaths was over a long, extended period of time, and it was consistent. It didn't let up. And the results, all you have to do is look at the statistics, and you can see the results.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with drinking. I mean, there's a pattern here that if people really paid attention to, that the outline and the steps necessary to take are already out there. All we have to do as we, the people, is decide that this is something important enough for us to follow through with.
Yes, and consistent with in all of those examples, what is consistent is that they were active programs over years. I mean, they still going on today. They weren't let's get up on a podium, let's talk about it, let's pass a law, let's say we've done something, and now let's get on with something else. They continued on and on and on and on.
And it's something for people to think about. I know that when you say gun control, the National Rifle Association freaks out. But the thing of the matter is that when that amendment was written, there wasn't a standing army or standing military at all. There were some places out west and even in the east, and I would say New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine, where law was scarce. So you needed something to protect yourself from whatever that was wandering around. But in today's society or culture, we have a standing armor. We have the police force, which is based on the military. That's why they created it. So in my mind's eye, the only people who really should be having guns here are, well, people who like to go hunting. I don't have any problem with that. I understand that. And people who are doing part-time, you know, security work or something like that, I understand that. But to see a 15-year-old openly flaunt a semi-automatic weapon and claim it's his right under the Second Amendment of the Constitution, to me, is obscene.
Well, that may be, and that's a very valid position. But I think we have to look at how has that attitude come to be, and how is it so entrenched in this country, and what does that imply in terms of what we need to do to get around it? Now, culture is like an onion. There are different layers of culture. Some of them are fairly easy to strip off, things like symbols and things like sports heroes and stuff like that. But when you get down into the core culture, core elements of culture, whatever they may be, change only very, very slowly over a very long period of time if you want to change them. I contend guns, and I think the evidence is that guns in America are at the core level of culture. So if they're going to be removed from culture, we won't do it by passing a law. We tried that with prohibition. We won't do it by just getting up and eliminating the NRA, if that's what it is. That's a thing that people would like to have. We are very in America. We are very short-term oriented. We want our results. We want things to be done now, but that won't work, I maintain, from what I've read and studied with culture. It's a long period of time. So, if we want to excise guns as a core element of our culture, then we'd better be prepared to never see success in our lifetimes, because that kind of a thing takes generations.
Yes. I mean, I understand how the gun became so important to our culture and to our society, but it's also going to be our undoing. It has two sides, the gun. It has a tragic side, and it has a good guy side. And unfortunately, in the late 20th century and the early 21st century, we see more of the tragedy of the gun than we do for it to be in the positive light.
I think we do see more of the tragedy. But again, I don't believe that we can, that we will solve that problem by just somehow or other focusing our efforts on getting rid of the gun. Let me give you an example. When I grew up, I got a gun when I was a BB gun, when I was like 5 or 6 years old, something like that. The BB guns are still given as Christmas presents to kids. Toy guns are given to kids. They learn to shoot. We have films and movies and books that extol the romantic aspect of characters who carry guns. And we have video games. One of the perhaps most insidious gun desensitizing aspects of our current technology and current culture. You can, in virtual reality, you can put on some glasses, pick up a replica of an AR-15, and go about shooting off and killing all kinds of people, and then put them down, and you're done with it. These things are popular marketing and accepted by parents in this country. And if parents don't change what their children grow up believing, then that culture will not change. I don't mean to be flailing around, but I think the roots and the effort to get this thing under control are much bigger and more difficult than just the NRA or than just the gun manufacturers, all of which are a part of it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was brought up on John Wayne and the cowboys and the Indians,
uh-huh.
and the Indians were always the bad guys, but now the Indians are beginning to speak up, and I think it's about time. I know that Canada has apologized publicly to their Native American Indians for doing what they did. I don't think the United States will ever do that, but Canada at least did it. And I was really glad to see that because they had technology that the American Indians did not have.
Well, and guns in Canada, guns are not a core part of the Canadian culture.
Not now, but when they were out west exploring and looting for gold, trust me, they had plenty of guns around to make sure that nobody jumped their claim.
They had guns, to be sure. Some Canadians had guns, but guns were not in Canada or part of the Canadian history from the very beginning as an integral part of it. Canadians, the original Canadians, and I'm talking
the original
about
Canadians came from Britain.
The original Canadian, if you look at fur trappers and set those aside, the major immigrations to Canada were first French and then English Americans, loyalists who did not agree with the American Revolution,
which was
a big influx. And those people generally did not have guns when they came in. So they didn't have the same need to for protection and sustenance because the government essentially sponsored them. The government had the guns, and this was the case with Australia and New Zealand too. Australia, of course, the original settlers were all convicts, and they didn't have guns. These other nations, migrations or immigrations, were sponsored by governments. And in the case of the United States, they were sponsored by more private or non-government entities. And when they came, they brought guns because they figured they needed them, and it turns out they did.
They did. They did. And I can understand it, but I also know that I would hope that by the time my grandchildren, especially the little one, by the time he's grown up and enters the adult world, that the culture on guns will lessen.
Well, and perhaps it will, and it will especially if lots of parents and grandparents relate differently to their succeeding generations as regards the subject of guns. But if you get back to the present day, the fact is the guns are here.
Yeah, I mean, cowboys and Indian movies are still being shown. I mean, we're a product of World War II and what followed. I suspect you were born in the 50s. And so us are even earlier. So as a result, we were very much brought up on rugged individualism.
That's right.
And not only that, that you and the Alamo, and I mean, we were inundated with all the myths and legend, Paul Bunyan, everything that had to do with being able to handle a gun no matter what sex. I mean, I was given an air rifle when I was around 10 or 11, and I was taught how to use it properly. And if you found pointing it at a person or not handling it right, you got it taken away, you got punished, and then a couple of weeks later, you got it back. But that was what you got for Christmas or birthday. So we were raised on that type of culture. But I'm hoping that as history has a way of softening with each new generation, that I'm hoping that eventually it won't be so much a part of the culture.
Well, I suspect that you're right, because I look at some of my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and those generations now in my own family include people who have guns and use guns and love guns, and they include people who are adamantly opposed and their children do not have guns. And that's changing, slowly changing the culture. But getting back to today, we're losing 65,000 people.
Yes.
A year.
But it doesn't seem to bother anybody within who have guns.
Well,
it doesn't seem to affect, for example, the lobby, the NRA, when there's just mass shootings at schools. And I think a lot of it is, well, as long as it doesn't come to my kid's school, so what?
We do think that way. I believe a lot of people think that way. It won't happen to me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it won't happen to me, but if we want to do something about it, I think we should look at what is it we can do to save a bunch of those lives early while the culture is changing slowly.
Yeah, because a lot of the solutions they have, arming the teachers, really? I mean, when right after 9/11 and I had to travel by plane, I was not happy to see troops carrying guns. This is the very thing that when we separated from Britain that we did not want. We did not want British troops in the streets carrying their guns around. It disturbed the delegates. Well, 300 years later, it's disturbing me. And I'm sure I'm not the only me who was being disturbed by it.
Well, let me tell you what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see us realize that different ways, a different approach, would save more lives. And by different, I mean something different than knee-jerk going to legislation and passing some ineffective laws about guns. And then going away and, okay, we're not going to talk about it now until the next one happens. And instead, let's have somebody on the national stage, and we're talking about political leaders, consistently start talking about what are we going to do about suicide in this country? What are we going to do? Let's have...
Or even more important, what are we going to do about kids being slain by random bullets being fired on city streets.
Well, you raise a good point. We get, whenever there's a high visibility shooting at a school or a mass shooting, the papers are full of it, and we get all anxious about it, and we should. But those families of those kids who are shot in a mass shooting surely do not grieve any more than the families of the mother of the inner city kid who gets shot by a drive-by shooting.
Yes, and you know you never hear about that, and yet there's more, I would say it's just as many deaths resulting from that as suicide. Because it's not a random thing. It happens daily.
Well,
I live outside of Philadelphia, and news reports that come in about these kids who are in their home, and the next thing you know, they're dead. They're 11. They're 9. They're 2 years old because a bullet went in the wrong house. And yet nobody's hair even gets put out of place by this.
No, because it's one at a time. It isn't reported anything other than the local area. It doesn't affect me. And so,
but it will affect you. And that's that's the shame of it.
So why don't we, I maintain that these things are local problems. They happen locally. They need to be solved locally. They need to have the cooperation of national, state, and local governments with programs that involve laws, that involve mental health, that involve education, that involve targeted patrolling. And there are examples of those things around the country that are working, but they get very little publicity. And I think that if we had a national focus on that kind of thing, we wouldn't solve the mass shooting problems. Although there's some things that maybe we could do better to get into that, but we would save more lives. And those lives are every bit as much worth savings as lives anywhere else. I guess what I'm saying is I think we're putting our resources and our efforts in the wrong place because we're butting our heads against that culture wall when we could achieve far more in results by putting all those same efforts consistently in the underlying, dealing with the underlying motives and circumstances that surround suicides and homicides, that surround inner city violence, that surround domestic violence, that surround school bullying, that surround, as I said, mental health.
Yeah,
which we do a terrible job of.
Well, you know, there's a saying out there, before you can conquer your enemy, you have to learn to think like him. And I think in order for us to really make headway about this, we need to understand where the real problems are and concentrate that way instead of trying to keep hurtling ourselves against the same wall that hasn't yielded any cracks yet, and I doubt it ever will.
Well, we agree.
We agree. So, Bruce, please tell everybody where they can find and buy your book, where they can find you on the World Wide Web, and any other pertinent information.
Okay. I have a website. It's called History Speaks Today. And if you put that together in all one words, historyspeakstoday.com is the website. And of course, it describes the book and the other lessons types books that I've done on that website. And it has links to where you can get them either directly from me or links to Amazon.com or Barnes & Nobles and other book dealers where they're available online. Amazon.com carries all my books. History and Gun Mania is definitely available there. It's also available as a Nook book on Barnes & Noble and other online dealers as well.
Terrific. And ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, should you wish to hear this interview with Bruce all over again, please go over to https://passionateworldtalkradio.com. Right-hand side of the page is the menu. Scroll down until you find Cool Your Heels. Click on it, and you should see it. For those people who are non-techie, not a problem. We have something called a Twizzle number. What is that? Well, you just find it, right-hand side of the page, and then look up the show, Cool Your Heels, and it gives you a phone number. Dial the phone number, and the interview starts automatically, and you can listen that way. You can also hear it on Alexa and Spotify and YouTube, iTunes, iHeart, Podchaser, Podcast. We're on all those directories, so please go and have a feast. And before you go away and stray, Sir Francis Bacon had this to say in 1597, there's little friendship in the world, and least of all between equals. Thank you all very much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful V-Day, a wonderful P-Day for President's Day, and will join us back on the 18th of February. So thank you all very much for listening, and remember, please keep listening. Thank you.